Hello, everybody, and welcome to yet another episode of Worldscast. This is our third episode of Worldscast. Some people suggested that I actually rename this cast. I'm actually considering it, and, you know, it's not too late to rename it. So I was actually thinking about just renaming it Black Lotus because, you know, you see all these podcasts about magic that are based on cards in the game or phases of the game, and pretty much every phase has been used. There's the end step, the main phase, damage on the stack, which quickly became an obsoleted name because there's no longer damage on the stack. Then there's card names like Covenant of Mides, Horde of Notions, things like that. So, yeah, I mean, we could just go ahead and take Black Lotus. Let me know if you like that idea. If so, this show is now called Black Lotus, not Worldcast. If not, this is still called Worldcast. And welcome to the show. So last 2 weeks, we talked about designing a new set, and we said that this set had to have something entirely new. And last week, I really didn't have an idea on what I wanted to do exactly, so I didn't present you guys with anything stupid or spend like 20 minutes trying to think of an idea because I honestly didn't have any ideas. But I do have an idea now. Now, the idea is to start with a new concept. The idea for any set is to start with a new concept or build on something that's already been done. Now, the set we were talking about the last 2 weeks, called Farside, which you can check a link in the description to, was basically a combination of Lorwyn and Time Spiral. It had the creature type or the card type aspect of Lorwyn. It had some tribal stuff, some artifact stuff, some colored artifact stuff, things like that. Lorwyn didn't have colored artifacts, Shards of Lara did, but it's that idea. And then Time Spiral, mixing everything together. But it was a little too chaotic, and I don't think that set would have worked as well as Time Spiral. And theme-wise, I think Time Spiral is actually very weak. It's all over the place, and that makes it an amazing set, and it's a very well-designed set. And the majority of the set worked very well, and it had all these cards that did all these diverse things, but it's very abstract, and I don't think we want to design that because it's kind of a bad example for how to design cards. It's kind of what Wizards had in set files for the last 10, 15 years, and then they put all that together and had some old cards that they had and put those together and had some ideas that they had for other cards, like Bajayan Growth or Red, or then they future shifted some cards. And on the Professors, I'm actually going to be talking about the cards that got future shifted, the ones that still haven't been reprinted or we haven't seen the reuse of, because there are actually a lot. And I'm interested in Innistrad and what it could have. Of course, everybody wants to see constructs and contraptions, what those actually are from Steam Flugger Boss. If you don't know what that is, you got to look it up. It's a really interesting card. Contraptions are some sort of permanent type, I think, but they're not listed on Termagoyf, and they haven't been used yet. But I think it's cool that Wizards planned ahead, basically at least five, six years with Future Sight, maybe, you know, 9, 10 years, maybe more, with all these ideas that they had. And Mark Rosewater had set up his huge plan for the next five, six years of Magic. It's a cool idea. So we have sets like Lorwyn plus Time Spiral, where you're combining two ideas, but that's a very rare kind of set. Especially Time Spiral was basically a block where every previous block had been combined. You have sets like Shadowmoor that expand on ideas, like you expanded on Hybrid here with the 2/ color mana, so like 2/ white on the three dudes, the Spectral Procession. Or you have Q, which is the untap symbol. Basically, it's the reverse. It's the ante of a regular Lorwyn world. You also have New Phyrexia. It's a new. It's an idea of how the bad guys use mana of paying 2 life or Phyrexian mana. But then you have some really old blocks like Urza's Saga that had the original artifact concept in it, or Torment that had the all creature set. And these were original ideas when they came along. And I think Zendikar is pretty original. Though there was Odyssey, which was, it had a land basis, and it had a lot of cards that were either based on certain types of lands or getting certain types of mana from certain types of lands. So that was a little unoriginal, but I think Zendikar would be considered an original set. So our new idea is, or my new idea is to make a new permanent type, and I'm going to actually take it from an idea that might have been used or might be in Magic design right now, but I'm not really sure. Now, the permanent type is called Structure, And about a year ago, Richard Garfield, the creator of Magic, mentioned on his podcast, Gaming with Garfield, he mentioned structures in Ravnica. And that was the last time he worked on a design team for Magic. It was in Ravnica, and that was with Mark Rosewater. And he didn't say the specifics of what structures did or how they functioned, but he did say they were a new permanent type. And I really liked this idea, and I had this idea of what structures could be, but obviously structures never passed into Ravnica, and I have a theory that Mark Rosewater and Garfield are working together on Innistrad, and that maybe they're bringing it to Innistrad. Maybe they're having Gothic-themed structures, because there's a theory that this set's going to be Gothic-themed, and Gothic is originally a form of architecture, so that'd be really interesting, and I think they could get people like John Avon that do amazing lands and structures to do really amazing work on in terms of art on the set, and really cool idea. But until we know what a structure is, I built my own idea of what a structure could be and put it in a set. Now, obviously, we can't make any new card types, card frames in a Magic set editor like you have with a Planeswalker. If I could do that, I would probably do that. But for the sake of a structure, all of them are artifacts. Because that's basically to make them distinct, and because I feel like every building is automatically an artifact. And it works as a building in Magic. So, for example, you have cards like Library of Alexandria. That would be a structure. And it's played in place of a land on your turn. So when you play a structure, it's usually going to tap for mana. Pretty much all the time it's going to tap for mana, though you would have cards or structures or lands like Arena that would not tap for mana. They would just tap to have a different kind of ability. But the cool thing about structures is that they're as powerful, if not more powerful, than most lands. But that's because they're destructible. Because what happens with structures is they come into play with stability counters on them. And they come into play with, for example, you've got Angelic War Room, which is an artifact structure, uncommon. Tap, add white to your mana pool. Tap, target creature with flying gets +2/+2 until end of turn. Now, this idea is similar to the Planeswalkers, where Planeswalkers were similar to creatures. Unfortunately, the Planeswalker idea kind of got a little out of control because all the Planeswalkers had three abilities that the creatures just couldn't have and that were very covered a lot more ground and were able to defend the Planeswalkers, but they were able to defend the Planeswalkers a little too well, and that kind of shows you how Planeswalkers are now getting out of control and being played in every top 8 deck. You know, we saw 32 Jaces in the top 8 of the most recent GP, which is, people say that's not a problem. People say you can play around Jace. Well, yes, you can play around Jace, but if your opponent's playing a Jace, and they have a better chance of winning because they're playing a Jace, and you can't play a Jace because you can't afford it, but you are going to go to this $30 GP, I don't think a player should be expected to pay $400 extra to get the Jaces, just the Jaces. Or $300 extra to get just the Jaces, or even if they have to trade for it, trading $300 worth of cards to get just the Jaces so they can play in this tournament, and then hope to get, like, a top 32 to attempt to, like, come close to making back their money. And even then, they get a top 32 and they get, a couple of pro points, not even $400. Maybe, like, top 16, you start getting to the point where you might make back your money, but, I mean, even if you're a really good player in a room of 1,500 people, it's a very unlikely chance that you're actually going to do that. And this actually brings me back to the legacy topic on the professors. I'm not going to address the legacy topic again because I think it really got people infuriated. We didn't want to replace legacy. We just wanted to propose an alternative because legacy is too expensive. And to me, that is not a debatable question if legacy is too expensive. People are saying, oh, you're just mad because you can't afford the format, or you're just mad because you can't afford certain decks. And yeah, it's true, I can't afford certain decks, but the majority of people, if you're playing in Magic, if you're playing for a $2,000 prize, you should not have to pay $2,000 to make a deck. And you should, Lewis Scott Vargas said that he would not like to play against opponents if he knew that his opponents didn't have access to enough cards in the format, the cards they wanted to play. And obviously, not everyone is going to have access to everything, but I think Richard Garfield said that he never wanted a single card to cost more than $20, and I don't think he foresaw, even if there was a cap like $20, if he foresaw all the rare cards being played in the top-tier decks and all costing $20 each. I truly think that he wanted, like Black Lotus to be $20 and Moxes to be $20 maybe. And maybe like if he saw Time Walk as an amazing card to be $20, but then, you know, have all these lower cards, like even the anti cards, like Contract from Below. And it's true that if you had if today you had a $20 Black Lotus, anti, just because it was such a low price threshold, anti might not have been eliminated from the game as being considered gambling. But where you can be, where you could be wagering $500 to $1,000 in Magic was too much. And Richard Garfield saw this, and I'm seeing it the same way he is. And I think Build Your Own Type 2 is a great replacement for Legacy in the Star City Games tournaments. Obviously, Legacy should still be sanctioned. It should still be supported at some GPs, especially when people are going to go there. And they're huge tournaments. They're planning to spend probably a little more money than they're planning to spend at every SCG Open. But, proportionate attendance of people going to Standard Opens, people going to Legacy Opens at Star City Games events is really going down. It's gone from like the Legacy Opens get like 40% of the Standard Opens do to getting like closer to 30%, and it's getting pretty ridiculous. And people are saying, well, yeah, Legacy was always less attended than Standard, they're just catering to the minority. And it's true, they are catering to the minority, but Wizards can cater to the minority just as well, and they don't have to host them at every Star City Games Open. Maybe they could hold alternate either Legacy one weekends, Builder and Standard, or something like that, another weekends. I firmly believe that if Extended was at the Star City Games Opens, it would be played more often than Legacy. Not just because it's also a PTQ format, but because people would be more interested, and it would become a much more supported format, like Standard is. Unlike Legacy, where it's so hard to support financially, it's so hard to support with traders, with salesmen actually selling Legacy cards. So getting back to this actual topic, if you want to hear more about that, you can check out the last episode of The Professors, which was episode 149. There's a whole 7-minute segment on it, and a lot of people are calling it out. But a lot of people agree, too. I've gotten, hundreds, over 100 emails about the topic, and it's about 50-50. And the emails are usually more supportive than the Trollin' Magic comments, and the Trollin' Magic comments usually don't make any sense. But if you want to hear more about that, my logic, why I don't want to replace Legacy entirely, but why I want to replace it at some tournament, why I think it should be replaced at some tournaments, you can listen to that. So examples of structures. We want them to be playable, even if you're outside that color in draft. And as a result, we're going to probably have a lot of colorless costs. Like having a 4 colorless white cost instead of a 3 colorless white cost, so that you can play some out of color structures to do some stuff. But we still want them to be playable. So for example, say you have, we want structures to be about between 1/4 and 1/3 of your draft picks. So you pick 42 cards in a draft, excluding the basic lands as 3 cards. So out of those 42 cards, we want you to play, well, hypothetically, like an ideal situation would be where you play, say, 6 to 10 structures in your deck, and you played a total of 18 or 19 lands, because you would be playing more lands in this deck, because the structures are, because they're destructible, you would need to compensate a little. It's kind of like playing Tectonic Edge or playing colorless lands. You need to compensate by playing more lands, usually. So you would have probably 18 to 19 lands in a 40-card limited deck, as opposed to 17 to 18. Maybe you might even have more. You might have like 20 structures if you've got like decent ones that have a decent effect. But is there a problem with this? Will you pick enough structures? Will you get 6 to 8? Well, yes. If we're not going to make a third of the set structures, but if we make a decent number of common structures, a decent number of uncommon structures, and a decent number of rare structures, a little less on the rare structures than the others, because usually your rares are taken up by bomb slots. But so if you pick, say, 10 to 14 structures in a draft, we want you to play, say, 6 to 10 of them, about. But are these too ridiculous? We say no, because they need to be protected, but they're also not as ridiculous as, say, Planeswalkers, because they only grant one ability each, and even if you have multiple structures out, they're not too ridiculous, and usually their effects have some limitation, and they also usually have, some of them have mana costs. It also makes walls and defenders very important in the set, and it makes hasty creatures attacking opposing structures really interesting and really important also. And I think this is a really cool idea. I think the idea of walls being an important creature type was actually a pretty cool idea for Rise of the Eldrazi Limited. I don't know how well it actually panned out, though, because I don't know how many people actually built a wall deck in Rise of the Eldrazi. I mean, you used it to defend yourself until you could get an Eldrazi, but even that wasn't as effective as using drafting a straight aggro strategy, where you could have, say, a bunch of Wildheart Invokers as opposed to a bunch of Vent Sentinels. However, the problem is that is there a balance enough between a player being crushed and, you know, having two structures and creatures and pumping the creatures up with structures, as opposed to the other player who probably just had one of their structures destroyed? Well, yes, there are ways to balance stability. Stability counters are what these structures come in with. So we have Pulsing Spire, for example, which is an artifact structure, uncommon. Tap, add one to your mana pool. And whenever a structure you control produces mana, you may remove a stability counter from target structure. So you can have, for example, you can counteract your opponent's structures by using this and by tapping for mana. And because there's no mana burn, you can just use that effect. And now we were testing out if this was balanced enough. And it really is balanced enough. You also have something like, because it is balanced enough because it only has two stability counters, and of course you need to protect it. But this is one that you would play later in the game. We also have another one called Toppling Stonewall, which is an artifact structure. Uncommon, tap to add one to your mana pool. Two colorless, tap, sacrifice, destroy target structure. So again, this is for the really problematic structures. That you are clearly going to have problems with. You're clearly not going to be able to attack. Now, we have something like Modulating Kingdom, which is a rare artifact structure. It taps to add one mana to your mana pool, but you can also tap, sacrifice a structure, put X stability counters on target structure, where X is the number of stability counters that were on the structure that was sacrificed, and it comes in with three stability counters. So this is a way to really manipulate the number of counters on a structure. Now, this is going to be a 249-card set, so we've obviously got to limit the number of structures that we have. I'm kind of thinking that a lot will be colorless, but you're also going to have a lot that do some pretty impressive stuff in terms of adding mana to your mana pool and color manipulation while having enough of a restriction. Now, we're assuming the set's going to be 249 cards, including basic lands, so we would want about... if we want somewhere between a fourth and a third of your draft picks to be structures, we would want something like 50 to 60 structures. Now, this obviously sounds like a ridiculous amount, and obviously we're not going to have any other lands in the set, and I'm not actually sure if that's too many. I mean, it's a lot, and obviously we're going to have a lot at uncommon, and a lot at a little less at common and less at rare. Because you're going to have rares as your bombs, and then you're going to have commons as basically the staple cards that you're going to need to draft in the draft. But for the uncommons that we're going to have, they're going to be very important, and I think we can keep 50 to 60 structures. But let me know what you think on that. It's a lot. So how do we achieve balance? So how can you have a structure with something like one counter, one stability counter that can be attacked by, say, a Raging Goblin, which I think we might reprint a version of in this set, probably, to basically... balance structures versus red. And the way you do this is you play your lands in a certain order. So, for example, today we have, say, Clawblade playing Tectonic Edge, and then on their second turn playing Plains, and then on their third turn playing Seachrome Coast so it can come into play untapped, and then on the fourth turn playing Glacial Fortress. Of course, you might play it in a slightly different order. You might go Tectonic Edge, Seachrome Coast, or you might go Seachrome Coast, Plains, Tectonic Edge, Glacial Fortress, so that you have Mana Leak mana up, and you also have Spell Pierce mana up in your first two turns. But we can have powerful structures that allow for balancing in colors by the spells that you can cast. So, for example, we have Light Void Cathedral. It's a rare, it's an artifact structure. You can tap to add blue, black, red, or green to your mana pool, which obviously sounds ridiculous, but it only has one stability counter. However, it can also tap to put a stability counter on it. So this is basically, this is equivalent to if you're planning on keeping your structure safe. This rewards people for playing very well, remembering when to put stability counters on their lands and how to put them on and what colors of mana to use and what to leave up to threaten a certain spell on your opponent's turn, like an instant or a flash creature. Now, this is about equivalent to Reflecting Pool, basically, or an Exotic Orchard, where you would have access to four colors of mana, and I have the cycle of these. So there's like Light Void Cathedral, there's something like the C one, there's something for the Demon one. So you have all versions of this. So for example, there's Rage Void Barracks. So in this case, the card adds all types of mana except for red, and it's a structure that is basically the way it goes is it's something that the color that's excluded would have, and then the void of that thing, and then a place that that color would have. So for example, a white deck would have a cathedral, or like a white area would have a cathedral, a red area would have barracks. A black area would have like a void or a chasm, like a chasm room. And the reason these are actually structures instead of lands is they do have to be specified as basically buildings, as opposed to or even spaces, as opposed to the lands themselves. So the point of Light Void Cathedral, for example, it's allowed to come into play untapped, but you got to play it early, and you're probably going to have to put a lot of stability counters on it to actually balance it well. And, you know, structures, I don't know if I mentioned this, work the same way as creatures. They can be, work the same way as Planeswalkers, sorry. They can be attacked instead of a player. And obviously, a lot of the times, you're going to be attacking with Planeswalkers, you're attacking the Planeswalker. But with structures, the lower costing ones, it's more like you're going to be attacking the creature most of the time. And then other times, you're going to have to attack the structure. Have to make the split decision between letting your opponent basically accelerate in mana or like stay where they are in mana or attacking your opponent. Now, for example, we have common structures that are basically basic lands. One's Vine Tail Platform. It costs 10 mana. It has 10 structure counters and a tap side green. So this is basically the same thing as Tree of Tales, which is the Mirrodin artifact land that taps for green mana. Now this isn't a problem because affinity, you have affinity, but not until you go back to Legacy. And the point of these cards is that they can often replace basic lands, and if they do get printed in the final set, they'll have to. Though they probably could just straight up replace basic lands in the set as cards you draft, like in packs. Like you could get one of the five of these in one of your packs as opposed to basic lands, and I think that's a pretty interesting idea. That might be a good way to generate packs as opposed to just giving basic lands as the 15th card in the pack. Now, these obviously lands like this are rarely going to be attacked. But it's interesting that you can threaten an attack on these cards as opposed to your opponent, and you might force your opponent to not block, or your opponent has an ability that will let them do something once they have a lot of structure counters on certain structures, and there are cards like that. Like there's one structure that if you have, I think it's 30 counters on it, you win the game. Obviously, it's always a kind of Helix Pinnacle effect that's on almost every kind of card. It's on almost every kind of set. Sorry, I'm really rambling today. So, can we make cards like this card here, Molten Storm, two colorless red-red sorcery, destroy all structures? Can we make cards like this? No, we obviously can't put it in the set. In fact, I just deleted that card from the set file. We can't. It's too good. It's like Armageddon. It can start over the game. It can be one-sided Armageddon, basically Plague Wind for structures. So there's balance issues with cards like that. But I think this is going to be the main theme of the set. And so far, the structures we've tested out, there are 50 structures here. Probably not all of them are going to be in this set. I hope not, because some of them are, there's some repetitious ones. But all of them so far are balanced. You can check out this new set, as well as Farside, which I'll be including in the description, as well as Gideon the Golden Heart, which is something that you guys were talking about last week, a legendary creature that becomes a planeswalker. We'll talk a little more about that next week, and possibly how that will be our version of planeswalkers in the set. And whatever you guys want to talk about in terms of new themes. I'm thinking defenders, some defenders, very few defenders, and very few hasty creatures. But, you know, that being like kind of a sub-theme in the set. And not having too much on structures, but having them basically play the part that lands would play. So let me know what you guys think. And this is Anthony Palmerio, tapped out for now. And until this weekend's episode of The Professors, on tap soon.